Now is time to say goodbye to all of our survivors. But at least the ending was truly satisfying. Ladies and gentlemen, this will be our final Survivor Karamoan podcast, which that alone makes me happy. But knowing that we get to do this podcast by saying Cochrane, who does not have a first name, is the champion. Oh, that makes me giddy. How are you doing, Bill?
For a second, I thought you were going to sing the Mickey Mouse Club theme, and I'm like, dear God, no.
No, there's no singing here. That's a completely different podcast.
I'm so happy I feel drunk, and I'm not even drinking, which is a rarity.
It's so difficult to sit there and just absorb what happened, and yes, maybe it was telegraphed a little bit, even though it came about in one of the craziest, funkiest ways known to man, but we have another season of Survivor in a row with a feel-good, deserving winner.
Yeah.
As crazy as some of these seasons have been, as bad as some of these seasons have been, this one included, especially for the first half, this is a damn good result, and we're having seasons with returning players that are actually yielding positive finishes. Again, folks, in case you don't remember, this is the Reality Rant Podcast. Eric Pierce of Gamesha Newsnet. That is Bill Hammond. We have tons to talk about when it comes to Survivor, and we actually need to back up a step.
Yep.
Before we sit here and absolutely geek out on Cochrane winning, which again, Cochrane. Yes!
John Cochrane, certified badass.
He does not have a first name.
No. He has a first name now because he has taken over the legacy of Johnny Cochran. He is now the real Johnny Cochran. The other one that defended OJ, he's dead. He doesn't exist anymore. He's the real Johnny Cochran now. And he's a certified badass.
Except this guy doesn't want to be a lawyer. He wants to be a writer.
I still want to read that paper. I want to find that thesis paper and read it. I really do.
I think you'll find it without much difficulty. But
I've been searching for it for years. I haven't been able to find it.
Let's back up a step. Brenda. Oh, Brenda. Sweet, sweet Brenda, which, man, you really look a lot hotter pregnant. That is a crazy concept, but true.
Mom boobs.
Brenda and Dawn. We have a moment of Survivor controversy, potential hypocrisy, potential show me your teeth! How do you even, absorb what actually happened here? You have another Dawn freak out because she lost her retainer and her bottom teeth and can't imagine being on television looking like an absolute fool, because that doesn't happen every episode. Brenda goes down, dives, finds the teeth, gives them back to her. You have this moment of love and joy and exultation and we're friends forever, and then stab, stab, stab. Stab, stab, yep. Stab, twist, stab, stab, salt, stab, stab, stab.
Yep.
Now, let's make this completely clear. And if you disagree with me, you better speak up fast.
Right.
But it is the policy of the Reality Rant podcast to side with Dawn on this issue.
Yes.
You are perfectly permitted to still vote the bitch out. If you think it's best for your game, the game is separate from all of this. Dawn said this well, I thought, in Final Tribal, mentioning that I exploited the friendships and relationships. What she wasn't really clear about was that her natural personality, her nature, is to bond and make people feel warm and comfortable. This is that kind of a woman, you know? She basically is going to treat everyone like they're a child of hers. She's got six adopted children. That's just her personality. It's warm. And she did have to actually allow herself to say, okay, even though I'm being this super nice person, when it comes time to vote, I forget who these people are. I look at them like chess pieces on a board, and I make the right decision. It doesn't matter if they're my son, my daughter, my mother, my brother. I make the right decision. If she didn't do that, this entire season changes, because Cochrane would have noticed that Dawn wasn't capable of doing that. Cochrane would have found a different alliance member and found a way to get rid of Dawn earlier, which we've seen that happen before. I mean, you put it together. Because she was willing to do that, that's the reason she got to the end. She did work her way to the end. When she says she made decisions that actually controlled her destiny, she did.
Mm-hmm.
We more than anybody would love to sit here and say, bullshit, you didn't do anything. You were weak. You were a pawn. You got carried. No, that was a legitimate co-effort between Cochrane and Dawn making it to this finish. We've said that all season long. When it comes to Brenda, though, do you feel Brenda has the right to be bitter in the way that she was?
I mean, I can honestly say that if I were in Brenda's shoes, I would not have taken it so personally.
Mm-hmm.
However, and this is the one area where I will fault Dawn in this regard, okay?
Yes.
Dawn is just as big a fan of the show as Cochran is. She's been watching it since the beginning just like he has. There are two bits of previous precedent that she should have been aware of. One, if your natural tendency is to be loving and nurturing,
mm-hmm.
the jury will expect you to live up to that for the entire way. If you recall Pearl Islands, how many people just took Lil to task for wearing a Boy Scout uniform, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
Now, and obviously that wasn't, you know, that was in no way her fault because the producer decided we're going to strand you with what you're wearing, you know?
But you do have to identify how you're being perceived.
Exactly.
And then play the role. If you create this contrasting image, you're going to cause real problems. That's why, you know, it was said at Final Tribal. It's like, why does it seem like Dawn's the one taking all the punches to the gut and Cochran, you're just sitting here perfectly fine? Well, one, Cochran, has he admitted, I kind of love it. You know, this is kind of how I like it. Yeah. Because you got to sit there and just be calculating and cool and even-handed. Nobody really loved you, but nobody really hated you.
Yeah.
That lets you do anything you want. People fell in love with Dawn. People were willing to put up with her paranoia because they really cared for her and they wanted her to do well and she was this sweet lady. And as they slowly realized, she's cutting us. She's cutting each one of us, and her moves are actually to help her game, not just to stay here for a while and be here with us. That didn't sit well with people.
Yeah,
they weren't willing to accept it. And, you know, you saw crap on the internet.
Yeah,
you saw people cussing and complaining, and yes, to the point that she shut down her Twitter account because Dawn was making game decisions, and that's because America looked at her and said, oh, she's just a nice lady, and it's good to see her go far. It's almost like looking at her like Lisa. People got mad at Lisa last season just because you're supposed to be Sweet Blair from Facts of Life and this mom and this religious person, and when you make a decision, you're supposed to have guilt over it. Lisa at least exhibited guilt. Dawn didn't. Dawn, I wish she went full villain and said, after the Corinne moment, because we talk about that Corinne moment, that was her turning point according to her. After that vote out, I realized, oh my God, I have everybody right where I want them. They all love me. They all will do anything for me. They'll all tell me anything. I need to exploit this more. I wish she had really flipped the bitch switch and been like, holy crap. Because clearly, if she wanted to win this game, she needed to do that and eliminate Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
Which would have been so hard then even to sell, but I think Cochran might have been the one person who would sit there on the jury and tell everybody, okay, seriously? She played the game.
Yep. The other thing that she needed to bear in mind, I mean, again, how many times have we said the only people you're playing for are your family? You know?
Yes. Thank you.
We've said that many times. But again, that's us in a vacuum sitting at home saying this is how the game should be played, and we're right. Mm-hmm. However,
which is something that favorites understand because they've been there before and they probably regret it the first time when they got too close.
But just as Dawn should have been remembering Lil's situation, she should have kept. She should have been following some BR rules of her own.
Mm-hmm. Are those trademarked yet? The BR rules. I mean, they're supposedly a book now.
There is a real book. I'm intrigued for all the wrong reasons, but
the BR rules is written by Amber Burkitch.
Oh, well, there's a B and an R in there, yeah. But that's the thing. She, as big of a fan as she is, she should have remembered what happened between Lex and Rob, because just like with Brenda getting Dawn's teeth, Lex felt that saving Amber for that one vote was something beyond the game. It was a gesture of friendship. It was a gesture between people on an emotional level that transcended the game. And at the first opportunity, they got snaked for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, you and I, recognizing proper gameplay, know that Dawn made the right move. But in doing so, in failing to recognize the situation, she lost not only Brenda's vote, but probably every vote on the jury. I mean, I'm pretty sure there were a couple people who were going to vote for Cochran anyway.
Right.
But she very well could have won if she just waited one more round to get rid of Brenda.
It's kind of true, and especially if she could have found a way to make it look like Cochran was more involved in that decision. What's really difficult is you sit here and you look at the timing, and as Cochran pointed, timing was everything. It wasn't necessarily being able to out-strategize people, but it was timing that strategy. Because, yes, when you have this many favorites, everybody knows that the strategy is to split the votes here, keep the numbers there, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody but the Cool Kids Club that thought 4 was good enough to beat an alliance, a tribe of 10. It's like, no, that doesn't work. But
yeah, I mean, all of the things being equal, let's just say they vote out Eddie at in sixth place instead of Brenda. Mm-hmm. Okay, all of the things being equal, Eric gets medevaced as soon as they leave Tribal Council. Which, dear God, of all ways to finish in the same spot you did last time, you got to feel bad for the kid.
Which, I was a little disturbed by the fact that they sat there, gave him an IV, and then said he could potentially come back in the game.
Well, they did that with Mariano in Heroes Villains. They gave him an IV too. So I mean,
make me happy. As soon as you receive legitimate medical treatment, I'm like, you're done. Think about it this way: you could give that IV to any of the other players, and it would help them leaps and bounds from where they are currently. They'd be energized. You can actually buy IV treatments in Las Vegas to get over hangovers.
There's at least precedent for it. It's not something that
a whole 20-minute piece, but.
But again, so all of the things being equal, you vote out Eddie instead of Brenda. Eric gets medevaced the minutes later. The next day you have the reward challenge, which was supposed to be the penultimate immunity challenge.
Right.
A balance challenge does seem to tend to favor women, so it's possible Brenda could have won that one and gotten the advantage instead of Cochran. But really, this is just a challenge that
it's a skill challenge and focus.
It's a skill challenge that rewards intelligence and a steady hand and having a small frame. So you're not so heavy-handed when you're stacking the cards. So I would assume that Cochran would have won that one anyway, and that advantage that he earned to basically have the bags already untied, it was huge, but also required him to still put out the physical exertion to go get them. Yeah. I thought the advantage was just going to be having one bag already waiting for him.
So
even with that, he still wins that challenge. Then you're looking at a situation where, okay, he's in the same spot. Do I get rid of Dawn? Do I get rid of Brenda? You know, and there's no way that Brenda convinces Sherry and Dawn to turn on Cochran. It's just not going to happen. She would make a play, certainly, but it just wouldn't work. And say she gets voted out in fourth place. Mm. Even with Dawn voting for Brenda in that situation, Dawn is forgiven. It's not held personally against her.
Right.
Now, it's like, again, remain cognizant of survivor history. It does pay off.
It does. And at the same time, I'll sit here and I'll defend Dawn from one aspect, not all aspects, but the one that, you know what, she was following the plan. Clearly by the fact that Cochran said, I want to sit next to Dawn, not Eddie. Because there's a lot of people out there who were like, wait, why don't you get rid of her now? Why not? She's the only other quote-unquote player in this game who has strategy. If you believe Sherry has no chance because she hasn't done crap, even though she thinks in her little delusional world that she's made massive moves... You know,
we'll get to Sherry in a minute.
Really what you're looking at when you're looking at a choice between Eddie and Dawn, and I thought this was absolutely right when I thought about it. If you choose to get rid of Eddie, you're saying, I believe my game stands on its merits and beats Dawn's game. Because we both played, in essence, the same game, but I did it better. I won more challenges. I was just as, if not more, strategically involved, etc., etc., etc. If you vote out Dawn and keep Eddie, you're saying, I'm 100% confident I do not have a bitter jury of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Because Eddie is what is called an alternative.
Yep.
If you don't like Cochran for some reason, here's a likable lug. I mean, let's call him what he is. He wants to open a bar with a little doggy park basically next to it. If you just don't like Cochran, you could throw your money to Eddie.
Yep.
Just for making it and dealing with the elements and just because. Cochran made the decision that my game stands on its merits and I'm going to eliminate your other option. You will feel like crap if you give the money to Sherry, so you have to pick between the two of us and I'm the obvious choice.
Yep, and
would have been the same position had Brenda been sitting there instead of Eddie. Do you want to have the likable or do you want to have the game you can beat?
Exactly, and the thing is, it's not even a matter of thinking of a non-bitter jury.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a logical human being, Cochran has to assume that if Eddie's in the final three with him, no matter what arguments he makes, he's got Malcolm and Rena locked.
It's a dangerous vote that there's at least two that way, and if more flip, you're in trouble.
He probably has Michael as well. that's three votes immediately. There's a chance at Andrea flipping. That's now you're in a potential tie situation. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what he might have feared about people respecting Don's game more than his, he couldn't count on Don getting any votes. You can guarantee votes for Eddie.
There you go. Now let's talk about this final four for a little bit here. I mean, yep. We sat here and we talked about the difference between Eddie or Don making, but we have not talked about Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Can you please defend for me why she actively did more than Coattails? And the funny thing is, for the first half of the game, I could defend a lot of what she did to keep this game going. She by no means is a weak player, but she actively had to not play the second half of the game in order to survive.
Exactly.
Her jury arguments were horrible.
Yeah, I mean, you knew she was sunk from the opening statement where she just basically stammered through it. But here's the thing. I still think she could have saved some face.
If she didn't mention that I'm a businesswoman with 75 employees?
No.
And I'm basically a millionaire-ess?
No, the money argument never holds sway. No one ever decides someone doesn't get to win because they're already rich. That's never happened. But here's the thing. I mean, you had Philip with his little grandiose, I'm removing you from Stealth Aros, because that was just that was hilarious, but pointless.
I was like, wait a minute, did she just win? She got out of Stealth Aros. How'd that happen? She just won.
But more importantly, Eric's little diatribe about, you know, admit that you were carried. You know, here's the thing. Yes, she was carried. I mean, she controlled the fans' tribe for up until the switch. We'll give her all the credit in the world for that. She was running the alliance, but the switch killed her, and she basically took whatever lifeline she could once the merge happened to stay around as long as she could, and she got carried to the end. So yes, she was carried, and yes, it is slightly delusional not to see that. At the same time, admitting to the jury that you were carried is tantamount to forfeiting the game.
Mm-hmm.
She can acknowledge the sentiment, but she also has to make it clear that she had her own game plan, and that had to be adjusted on the fly, and it would be an insult to the game for her to, air quotes, admit she didn't play. I mean, honestly, rather than lash out at Eric, ask him what it buys her to give this admission. His attitude already tells her that he's not voting for her, which is why she, you know, got snippy with him. But what reason does she have to believe that his mind will be changed by her telling the whole jury that she, in essence, doesn't deserve her spot at the end? You know, If she calmly and logically turns that argument back around on him, I think she might have picked up a vote. It wouldn't have been from Eric, but she might have gotten a respect vote from, say, Reynolds, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, it's a catch-22. Admit you were carried. You're basically telling me to admit that I don't deserve to be here. Well, how is that going to earn me votes to say I don't deserve to be here? Right. You know? So, again, she could have saved some face, but she was just completely and utterly flustered and you know, out of her element when it came to those kind of questions. Contrast that with Dawn and Cochran. They both were spectacular.
Good. I think good. I think Cochran played as well as he needed to. I, again, would love to see him sitting next to somebody who was a little better than Dawn, because I think he would have pressed even harder. Dawn's answers, for the most part, were good, but let's go to the answer of the night and the teeth. The teeth.
Show us your teeth.
Do you
show
think... us? No, yeah, wrong. Bad. This isn't Mardi Gras for dentists. But really, some people have said that it was cruel for Brenda to make that request. Some people think that her analogy, in essence, was dead on. If you're going to tell me that you would not have quit the game over the teeth, even though in that moment you were acting hysterical as if you would have pulled yourself, then taking out your teeth right now should not be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think Brenda was maybe a little cruel in that moment. I think it was justified to be cruel considering the way she was eliminated from the game. And I think Dawn made a huge mistake in not, frankly, just snap them out and kind of give a sad face and maybe even cry a little bit if you can. Yeah. And then don't demand sympathy. Just be like, it hurts, yeah, but I hurt you and I probably deserve that.
Yeah,
I won't take it back. I had to do it for the game. You know, again, people wanted her to sit there and defend her actions. Don't apologize for anything you did. Admit that, yes, I have more blood on my hands because I had to. because this squirrely little wimp next to me wouldn't have been willing to make the same decisions. She had to try that angle. She had to try to make it seem like Cochran wouldn't have been able to do this without me. She tried once, but she didn't go full Monty on it.
Yeah.
And even then, I can't tell you it definitely would have worked. Probably not, but you had to try something.
It probably wouldn't have worked, but it would have been a better option than, you know, being argumentative and just funfering on it for 5 minutes before finally just acquiescing and doing it. Because in doing that, it's, again, the same thing with Sherry. It's like, admit that you were carried. It's like, you're not actually gaining anything, and you're basically justifying the jury's anger at you at that point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you just say, at the time, yes, I was distressed, but I would not have pulled up myself out of the game, here's the proof, that buys her some points. It may not. It certainly wouldn't have been enough to win at that point, but at least it would be saying, I'm doing this, I am proving my point, I am not pulling an act of contrition, I am apologizing for the hurt feelings, but that's it, here's the teeth, I'm putting them back in now, you know?
Yep.
But still, as we said, though, if Sherry and Don had done those things, we're looking at a case where Cochran wins 5-2-1 at worst.
Mm-hmm. So, as we transition from the game itself to the post game, I just want everyone in podcast land to sit back for a second and absorb what we've gone through in the past couple months in reality TV. There was a show called King of the Nerds.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an entire show dedicated to guarantee that we would have at least one nerd win a reality show.
Mm-hmm.
But let's think back for a second. Big Brother.
Yep, Ian. Ian won.
Ian Terry. here with Survivor and Cochran. Again, no first name anymore.
Yeah. It's the Beekman boys winning Amazing Race.
It's really been a bit of a nerd renaissance on these shows.
It's been a banner year for the dorkular variety. Yes.
Now here's going to be the problem. We really need more quote unquote female nerds. We need more female nerds on these shows, which is a very difficult archetype to find and cast. Because even in Cochran's case, you're dealing with someone who is extremely shy, being thrust into a social game and being asked to play. Fortunately for him, his mind overrode and controlled him that first time around. And the second time around, it's like, oh, we're doing this again? Well, perfect. It doesn't hurt that he just has an internal passion for the show.
Look at the truly intelligent women that have played Survivor over the years. You're looking at Stephanie from Thailand. Not Palau Stephanie. Stephanie from Thailand, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Voted out fifth episode. You look at Christina in One World, bullied and berated and called worthless the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
The only one who's the only like bookish woman who's ever truly made good is Sophie.
Hmm. But again, how satisfying was that too? Pretty satisfying.
It was very satisfying.
Best possible, but damn good. Damn good.
Yeah. Well, it was satisfying, if nothing else, because it was the first time in Survivor history that a season with returning players had a newbie win.
Yes, tell us about it.
And Cochran's only the third to make it happen. Denise was the second last season, and Cochran is the second man to win a returning player season.
So, let's talk about this, because Survivor does have an epidemic. It's called returning players. Yes. And in my opinion, there's just been way too much. We know we get 2 survivors a year at this point.
And they started filming today, so. Yes.
Can I just say, would it be that much to ask that the first survivor of the year is all newbies and the second one is always returnees of some kind of twist? That would actually make me happy because I don't hate returnee seasons. I don't. Not fundamentally.
We just hate that the show seems to default to it now.
You would have much more variety if you went back and forth. You know the next season's always going to be different than the current one because it's at least going to start out different.
And if you think there's more of an audience to be had with the returning players, fine. Make that the spring season where you have less and less of a chance to get interrupted by sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, if you lose ratings in the fall season, you know, it's new players that you might bring back at some point, but you don't have to worry about them ever again.
So,
you know,
as we watch that reunion and we're basically smacked in the face by stupid blood versus water clues.
Yeah.
Until he just finally said it. Let's just call it what it is, folks. There are cast lists rumored out there. It's basically going to be 10 returnees and some kind of blood, close friend, family member, dating, sex toy relationship.
Yep. Yeah, because somehow people thought sharks.
I wish. Can we do, I actually think it would be great, but we know how impossible this would be. If you could do, like, Survivor Atlantis and literally, like, strand them not on an island, but, like, on a man-made raft that they have to construct out of bamboo, and they're floating out in the middle of the ocean, that would be hilarious. People would die, but it'd be hilarious.
If there's sharks, our friend Steve would finally watch.
Yes, we have one friend who believes Survivor only matters when someone actually dies, which I guess technically he finally got paid off on that. What was it, like the Bulgarian version or something? I forget.
French version, yeah.
There you go. So let's look at this cast list really quick.
You must have loved the Hunger Games.
Ugh, tell me about it. Tyson.
Coming
back.
Yeah.
I don't hate that, but...
He was funny in Token Chains, but he was... I'm sorry. When your idiocy causes the downfall of your entire alliance, come on.
Aris.
Again, how the hell has Terry not been brought back at some point? You know,
Aris is a decent winner, but honestly, when I think back, I'm like, that was kind of a boring winner.
It was a boring winner because we went into a final four of Aris, Danielle, Ceri, and Terry, and we were given a final two of Aris and Danielle.
Yep.
We were given the bottom two of what should have been what could have been the greatest final two matchup ever. And again, Ceri has been brought back twice. Danielle's been brought back. No Terry.
We'll just sit back and deal with it. Speaking of people being brought back more than twice, Rupert.
Hey,
I guess he's giving up on political aspirations and selling his t-shirts. It's time to get back on the island.
Well, just like with Rob, maybe the fourth time's a charm.
Just, no. This is maybe mean to say, but I do not believe Rupert has what it takes to win Survivor.
He'll always be a fan favorite. I mean,
yeah, good guy.
Great physical competitor, great social player, but he was never there in the strategy department.
But is it wrong for me to say that when I look at a returnee, aside from just entertainment value, I actually do sit here and say, knowing what they did wrong in their previous game, are they capable of correcting it to give themselves an opportunity to win? It doesn't mean that I think they're likely to win, but I have to be able to sit here and say, they've got a shot. And Andrea, I look at it and you know what? I was like, definitely has a shot.
Yeah.
It could happen.
I mean, the big point in Rupert's favor, I guess, is he's the only player who's played the game three times and made the jury all three times. So,
yeah. And given his character, it's probably surprising he hasn't been voted out earlier one of those times.
He has always been long for the game, even though he's never made it to the end.
Let's keep going down the list. Monica Culpepper from One World. And yes, get ready, folks. Here comes the entire One World list. Colton.
So clearly Monica's partner is going to be her husband, Brad, the former NFL player.
Hey, look, we're getting more celebrities on Survivor.
Gee. And of course, and with Monica and now Colton, we are starting to dip more into pre-jury boots.
Mm-hmm.
Colton, I know it's supposed to be like a family or relation thing, but I would absolutely love it if his partner was his black maid.
Yes. That would actually be kind of fantastic.
And then Kat, of course, is dating Hayden.
Yes. Hayden of Big Brother fame, which means a Big Brother player is finally going to go and do Survivor.
I'm sure Jace wants to murder somebody right now.
In all sincerity, this is the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I want to see a Survivor player go to Big Brother, not vice versa. And of all people... Hayden? No. Give me someone, like, put Rachel on the island. I would love that.
You know,
only to see her tortured.
We love you know, it's three people from One World, which is one of the worst seasons in the show's history. A grand concept that failed miserably.
Mm-hmm.
Now, believe me, as much of a bastard as Colton was, we didn't want him to go out in a medevac. We wanted him to
get his comeuppance.
We wanted to him to, as big as a fan as he is, to actually go out the right way and have his torch snuffed and get blindsided. So I'm actually okay with him coming back because I want to see his experience paid off.
I would put it this way. I'll pay him off in one way and one way only, and that's if he gets Francesca'd. That's got to be the term at this point.
I'm about to say, like,
go out first is to be Francesca'd.
I'm about to say, how are you going to pay off Colton Cumby? Hello.
Oh, boy, yeah. But
no. Hello, Box. Would you like to be violated?
So get it correct. Going out first is being Francesca'd. Going out first twice is being Francesquad.
Yes.
So
who's next?
Laura. Laura Barrett from Shimoa.
Okay.
Pasty Laura.
Here's the thing. I couldn't stand Laura from the moment I first saw her. First of all, because this was the first case where where original players knew each other going into the show. She and Brent went to the same church.
Mm-hmm.
Two, anyone who you know, come at me politically if you want to, but anybody whose first sentence of their bio is "My hero is Sarah Palin," get the hell off my island.
Personal bias, but maybe this is saying something. Put Bill on this island against her. This could get interesting.
And three. Again, this whole idea of what have you done to deserve a second chance? The only thing Laura did in her entire season of Survivor was prevent Russell from winning because she was a bitter bitch.
Yeah.
Because she was pissed off at him for not getting voted out and playing an idol like she wanted him to, and that was enough for her to say, you don't get to win even though you played a vastly superior game.
It's hilarious because you look at some players and you're more than happy to just see them go off into the sunset and never see or hear from them again.
I hate sanctimonious people. I'm sorry, and she is one of the she's one of the most sanctimonious bitches in Survivor history. And I would sooner set her on fire than give her a torch.
Is there anything else you'd like to say, Bill? Yeesh.
Moving on.
As some players were perfectly fine forgetting, some players you miraculously remember, probably because they were iconic in the creation of this series. Ideally, Jervis.
Now this is a fun one.
This is really interesting because I had to kind of like re-rack my brain and think back to that first season.
I remember Jervis.
No, I remembered exactly who he was, but you remember who they are, but then you have to think about them within the game and say,
well,
how does that apply today? Now remember, Borneo was the one where 90% of the people thought the game was, let me just see if I could survive for 36 days on this island and not actually die.
He was the one who started the tradition of eating rats. I also remember that when they were on the island, his second child was born, and they were given tree mail with cigars to celebrate. Which makes me wonder, is his partner his first child? Because that child would be old enough to play.
No, first child, maybe.
I was saying, the first child.
How old was the first child at that point? Are you confident on that?
Like 5 or 6, so they'd be like 18 or 19 by now. So
that'd be a little crazy.
Is like the child who was born when he was on the island is only 13 or 14 now, but the older one would be able to old enough to play with him. And the other thing is he at least at the time the second child was born, his two children were from two different women that neither of whom he married. So at least at the time, so I can't imagine the baby mom was coming with him. But I would love to see if it was his first child. That'd be awesome.
As we continue to dip into that Survivor history bin, Tina Wesson Oil coming back. Okay, just Wesson, not Wesson Oil. But we're looking for sponsors, so Wesson Oil. Sure, Wesson.
I'm okay with that. I mean, again,
you can't really hate on Tina. In both the seasons she's done, more than fine.
Well, I mean, she was voted out first in All-Stars, but that was because of Winter Stench. So, I mean...
Right, Winter Stench, she didn't do anything really wrong there. You know, it wasn't like...
The big challenge for her is she was 40 in Australia, which means she would be 52 now, or 53. And a woman that old is rare on this show. Like normally when they have an old woman, they stop at mid-40s. She's in her early 50s now. So it'll be interesting to see how she holds up. And then who else we got?
Oh, yeah. We saved the best for last. Any of you who've listened to this podcast, you would be completely aware that there are certain people that we immediately peg and say, we need to see them again. And I mean that in every sense of the term. I don't mean just see them on Survivor. I mean see them eyes wide open, jumping up and down in front of my face, because we have one very, very sexy RC Santamore coming
back. Please don't let her partner be a boyfriend. Please don't let her partner be a boyfriend.
You know she got married, right?
Damn it.
No, I don't know that at all. So We will see.
Like, she's not allowed to have a boyfriend till I go visit her. And I was in New York last week. I should have found a way.
Considering her game, if we put that aside, absolutely. Absolutely second chance, open thinker, who, you know, just made the mistake of sticking around with a firecracker Abby Marie a little too long.
I mean,
you remove Abby from that season, RC can go very well to the end, potentially.
I picked her to win. And watching her, the only thing I didn't like about her was that she had too much of a Rachel Riley laugh, but but again, when you see her in a leopard bikini, forgivable.
We all get the points here. There are some interesting players, but my biggest complaint with this twist of blood versus water is we've talked about this before. We said if you're going to do a returnee, it would be interesting, but you know what? Let's kind of take something out of the Big Brother handbook. Let's do secret pairs. You could bring 10 returnees, and you could tell them to bring a family member, best friend, buddy, etc. But let's make sure that these are people that we cannot immediately assume are associated. Yeah. Like, you could tell the audience at home who's with who. Mm-hmm. But on the island, they're not told in advance.
And see, this is the problem with the concept.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when they say blood versus water, it's like the returnees are going to be the water tribe and the blood will be the relatives, friends, whatever. And, of course, it'd be like, oh, you're going to play against each other until 4 weeks in when we have a swap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just going to screw with the entire strategy. It's going to change the entire basic strategy of the game. Alliances are going to go out the window, except unless they're in pairs. I mean, you're going to have one person whose partner got voted off, first, but they somehow survived. So they're going to be a swing vote for the entire game and not get any respect at the end. It's a viable concept, but I can guarantee you the execution is going to be shit.
Agreed. There are too many dynamics that are just not going to work.
You want a good returning player season? Because I've come up with one, okay?
Okay, go for it.
I started toying with this when the Fans versus Favorites cast got announced, and we saw that Francesca was back. Because I combined that with the injured returnees in Philippines, like we're saying now we are willing to open it up to pre-jury people now.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, the only pre-jury evictees to come back were Boston Rob and Sheehan and All-Stars.
Sure. You know?
So I actually combed through the previous seasons of the show, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Up until Philippines. I didn't factor Caramoan in this one because it was going on at the time.
Okay.
And I have narrowed it down. I was able to find 16 men and 16 women that were worthy of a second chance. Okay.
32 player season. What?
No. I just happened to find 16 of each gender. Okay.
Okay.
I'm cast of 20. Okay. 10 men, 10 women. I paired the list down. But here's the thing. Nobody could have made the jury in their season.
Their respective season. Sure.
And I don't mean that if Francesca had made the jury this season, I still wouldn't have counted her as eligible because she would have made the jury the second time around. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they've never made the jury.
Never made the jury. Okay. Obviously, my thought would be that they would do like a schoolyard pick 'em to start out the teams, but that's just me, you know, having fun, because right. The captains of those two tribes, Jonathan and Wanda.
Yeah, we've said this 1,000 times. Jonathan and Wanda, if you could convince them to ever come back to the show, because I'm sure they felt like they've been done dirty enough.
So here's my second chance season. Okay, here's my cast, and I will defy you to find a flaw here. Okay.
Okay.
So tribe one, Jonathan is the captain, just for the purposes of my pick 'em fantasy, and they rotate genders. Gretchen from Borneo.
Okay.
First merge victim, the first one to start the pagonging, the first instance that we truly saw the alliance happening. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still remember the look on her face. Oh God, it's me. You know, like when she realized what was going on.
Yeah. At this point, okay. How old would she be? She'd be like 50 something, right?
She would be. Yeah. I think she was in her mid 30s. So yeah, she'd be in her late 40s, early 50s now. So yeah.
Yeah.
Brian Corden from Guatemala.
Yeah.
Let's bait Blake. Tina from Exile Island, first one out.
Okay.
You know, the whole thing, like, she was supposed to be on the previous season, but her son died in a car crash, and she was such a strong player that everybody thought she was going to get to the end, yet she was voted out first because of Cerie's superior social game. So I think she should get another chance.
Hmm.
Rob with two Bs from Thailand.
Oh, geez, really?
Because right before he was voted out, he had this, like, native experience where his entire outlook on life changed, and he went home and reconciled with his father. I want to see that new version of him in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it could be very interesting. I'm not going to say that. It's just like, wow, blast from the past there.
Yeah. Bit more recent, Christine from South Pacific.
Okay.
When you go on a Matty Elrod-esque Redemption Island run, but they sent, you know, Ozzy there to knock you out right before the merge, it's like she was too good not to get a second chance. I'm surprised she hasn't been brought back.
Well, again, and you got to keep thinking there. How often do they immediately say, we're not bringing you back because you're old? If you're older and you get on Survivor, it's so sad that it seems like you get one shot, and that's it. And they assume you can't be a character. I mean, again, she's got to be like 40s or something.
Yeah. Yeah, she's in her early 40s, yeah.
Okay.
Clarence Black.
Like, that's not redundant, but okay.
I do admit, I have a deep sympathy for the people who make the merge and then get voted out right before the jury for some BS reason. And come on. The fact that they punished him for sharing the beans with Diane the first day, but it said, like, oh, no, we're going to still keep you around because you're going to challenge, but then as soon as they hit the merge, we're voting you out. Come on.
Yeah.
Amputee Kelly B, Nicaragua.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. 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 Absolutely. Yes.
Jeff Varner, Australia.
Yeah. Again.
Shauna, Amazon.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, even though Heidi's never come back, she's had a profile, and of course Jenna's come back in one form or another so many times. I'd like to see Shauna back because they were a trio, you know.
They were. I wonder if there might be a little meekness there.
There was. I mean, she almost quit the game too. But
and that's my concern. It's like, do you think that would definitely be fixed coming back?
I think so because the other thing with this is a lot of the people I picked were victims of a gimmick. You know, if Amazon had been a normal season and not the first gender battle season, I think she would have actually made it quite deep into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Tribe One.
Okay.
Tribe 2, Captain is Wanda.
Yeah, again, Jonathan, Wanda. I'll pay them $100,000 each just to do the show again. To let them play for real. They deserve that much.
Kel.
Okay, yes. That's a name you've not heard in a long time, and yeah.
I mean, the first truly bitch move in Survivor history.
Mm-hmm, and he was the victim.
And he was the victim, and he's... And even though he was fully exonerated, he's never gotten a second chance.
Jerry Manthe made her name off of this guy's carcass.
Yep. Marisa, first one out of Samoa.
Okay.
And Russell's first victim, and by Russell's own admission, the reason she went out first was because, and this is what he said, in any other season, she would win. I want her to have that legitimate chance.
I mean, it's a fair statement, but again, this one's classic first vote outs. We don't know anything. You know, we really don't know how they would play this game.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, I picked her to win Samoa because based on her bio and her video, like, she was really smart and she grew up in a big family, so she knew how to, you know, basically assert herself and basically live harmoniously with a huge family, but also get the resources that she needed to do what she needed to do and provide for the people, for her brothers and sisters and everything like that. So I think she's deserving of a second go. Next, we've already covered this, Colton. I want it paid off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is a comeuppance first vote, I want him paid off. Another dip into the older woman pool, Tracy from Micronesia.
Okay, why?
Very smart player, victim of a tribal flip, you know, and of course Chet in his coral in the ankle thing, like, you know, she had an alliance, the tribal flip kind of ruined it, and you know, Sherry is basically what would have happened to Tracy had she made the merge, basically. So, I, you know, again...
Yeah, and Tracy, I guess, kind of fills that cougar quotient, because if I remember, yeah, she was a little bodacious, a little bit. But okay.
But again, this is doing this season would be the idea that there is no flip at any point. Like, these are the tribal dynamics for the whole tribal phase, and you go to the merge and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Savage, Pearl Islands.
Yeah, Savage, no questions.
The victim of Lil's return.
Mm-hmm.
Jill, Nicaragua.
Lumber Jill. Oh, yeah. She was fun. Can we point this out again, folks? I think our average age of females...
I am skewing older with the females on this one. There's not too many, air quotes, hot chicks here. But again, it's the idea that... These people were more victims of the circumstance in the gimmicky twist of their game rather than being able to play the pure game, you know?
No, I mean, if anything, and I mean, just looking up a profile here, I mean, this is someone who was an athlete in her younger years. So, there's physical quality there.
She was a triathlete, I mean.
But we've learned something when it comes to Survivor, and that's that these middle-aged to older women actually tend to play the game a lot better than your standard model central casting girls.
If you give them a chance, they excel. You know, Dawn, Denise, Tina, if you give them a chance, they actually do really well.
Even Lisa recently. You know, even bring Lisa Welch in. We're all like, oh God, here we go with the celebrity casting. It's like, she learned the game. Mm-hmm. I think she would actually be a really interesting returnee. She wouldn't qualify for this season. But I think if she came back now, everyone already knows she's this, but they also know she learned how to play the game. Would she be able to truly remove herself? And frankly, for a family season, how is Lisa not coming back?
Mm-hmm.
Who was it? Was that her son or somebody who came out?
Yeah.
And he was ready to play.
Yep.
I want to see him play. Yeah. Continue.
The Bob Dog. Come on, you know you want to see Bob Dog blast some fools.
Baby.
He got voted out for taking a dump. Come on. he was such a big character that, again, the whole thing of tribes of age and gender and everything like that, and he just ended up on the wrong side of the numbers when they got flipped and absorbed. You know, he had no chance.
Yeah.
This one will blow your mind a little bit. Angie.
Really?
Yes.
Why? You need to give good reasons now.
In the same vein as, you know, the older women aren't really that well represented most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The same with younger women who are considered offbeat, you know?
Sure.
And believe me, even though she wasn't in Palau for that long because Oolong sucked balls, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes, let's be very clear. We're talking about that, not Mormon Angie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She had a tenacity about her. I remember that the little pillow wrestling challenge where she won her bout and she was screaming like, "You guys go to tribal council for lunch, see how you like it," and they end up losing anyway. And I think she got voted out that episode. Mm-hmm. But it's like, but again, you know, as we saw with Cochran, just someone who's so insecure, but was ultimately accepted in the game. You know,
right.
So again, you know, get the second chance that you deserve for, you know, just not being on a pathetic tribe for once, you know.
I mean, maybe it helps. This isn't you just falling prey to tattoos, is it?
If that were the case, I would have said Courtney.
Okay.
And finally, Papa Smurf.
Yeah.
The only non-actor on Fiji, and of course he was medevaced. Come on.
Yep. So all things considered, even if you at home listen to that list and feel as if some of those, I don't really care, you've got to say that would be a very motley crew of characters, and at least more than half of them would be interested in seeing how they would actually play the game. And it becomes a mystery because we really don't know what they would do.
Yeah. And just for shiggles, my alternates, Amy from Guatemala, Dawson's, Stephanie from Thailand, Joe, who broke his ankle in Token Chains right before the merge, Blake... Mm-hmm. The other Jeff, Hunter, Misty, Aaron, Sydney, Courtney, Cowboy. These are people that are worth a second shot, you know?
Yeah.
This is a cast completely made up of people who did not make the jury or even make them. Some of them made the merge, but they were voted out at the merge and didn't make jury. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them were medevaced, and a lot of them were just victims of the twist. They didn't get to play the game the way it's intended to be played because of some gimmick that didn't work out, you know?
The sad truth, though, is that Survivor doesn't sit back when they're casting a new season and look at these people and say, who deserves a second shot? they sit here and say, well, they serve their purpose. We cast them to be fodder, and they're done, and we'd rather bring back somebody like Malcolm, who will just give us a great TV moment because it's a great TV moment, and spend all the idols at once, even though there might have been a better strategic position. So, who cares? We would love to see something like that. Hopefully some producer sits here and listens to it, and maybe even just gives two or three of those people a call and says, would you consider doing it again? And maybe we'll see them pop up in the future. We have a supersized podcast going here, and I would normally be like, we have to end this. People don't want to listen to us anymore, but we have one more big thing that we have to talk about.
The reunion.
This reunion. Let's just start telling the producers how they need to do this, because apparently they thought they could improve it by making some big changes. And
Probst told Entertainment Weekly that they were going to make some changes because the reunion show has, in essence, been exactly the same for the last 13 years. The only thing that's changed in the 13 years of doing this show, the first three reunion shows were hosted by Brian Gumbel. The fourth one was hosted by Rosie O'Donnell. That's it. Otherwise, nothing has changed about the reunion show in 26 seasons. So
until now. And let's just start off with, we're only going to bring the jury on stage. Jury and finalists.
That threw me for a loop, because when Cochran won, he goes into the crowd and hugs his family, and I look at the size of like, what is that? Francesca in the audience? What the hell's going on?
Is.
I was like, why isn't she up on the stage?
Yeah,
it's like all
such a huge slap in the face to people who take time out of their lives and put themselves through such an arduous adventure to not give them that one word. And we'd already had issues with that in previous reunions, that they'd be sitting there and not even get to say anything.
Yeah,
but at least they were sitting there. Now to truly relegate them to the cheap seats. I'm afraid to ask. Do they get paid?
They do.
But I'm saying it's like a measure saying, hey, you're not on the stage, you're not part of the finale anymore. Mm-hmm. We'll give you tickets to sit in the audience, but we're not going to pay you that bonus.
No. If you read the brilliantly bitchy tweets from Corinne, they learned at rehearsal that they were going to be sitting in the audience and not on stage. So they were certainly paid for coming out, and the default cynical response is that they wanted to find some way to obfuscate the fact that Brandon was banned from the ceremony, because apparently he got into it with some staff members at Loser Lodge as well, and was actually taken basically straight home, and he wasn't even allowed to go on the Loser's Retreat. Like he was physically removed from Karamoa, and like 2 days after he was voted out. So, but here's the thing: it's like given all the stuff that happened pre-jury, you know, you got Brandon, you got Francesca getting voted out twice, Shamar's histrionics, you know, all that stuff that happened, whether it was positive or not, it would have been nice just to hear from them, and especially find, you know, just explain why Brandon's not there. Like I said, give us a medical update on Eric and Shamar, just for that much. But more importantly, again, in a season where you're promoting the existence of fans, it does them such a disservice to tell them to sit in the crowd, hope for a generous camera shot now and then, and deny them their moment in the spotlight. You know, it's just truly bad form. You know, and even with the truncated stage presence, okay, we heard nothing from Michael. We heard nothing from Sherry after the votes were read. We heard nothing from Eddie. We got one line from Reynolds. So basically, all of the fans were completely shut out. And then when you include Eric, you had 10 people on stage and one via satellite, and we only heard from 6 people the entire hour.
My statement again about some people being cast onto these series of Survivor in order to be fodder, it was proven in spades. And yes, occasionally you get a character out of the newbies that they're like, hey, we kind of like this person. Maybe we'll carry them on to another season at some point. There is a hierarchy when it comes to Survivor, and there are the media darlings that they like to abuse over and over and over. You know, your Philip Shepherds or anybody with the last name of Hance.
Mm-hmm.
But at what point do you say that Survivor is supposed to be, and I know they'll disagree, a people's game?
And it's supposed to be about the people in the game.
It's people, human dynamics, adventure, regular people putting themselves outside their skins for the adventure of a lifetime. That's what it's supposed to be. But reality TV has lost that in many parts.
I mean, look, I agree that the format of the reunion show does need to be changed. But the way you do that is you start with abolishing this whole, hey, you just watched 4 minutes of commercials, so here's one crane shot of the stage while Probst narrates something, so we can shove 4 more minutes of commercials down your throat and cut 10 minutes out of the show. It's like they've been doing that bit of hackery for years. You know, abolish that. Allow yourself more time to put people on the stage and get them to talk. But, you know, again, shortchanging the contestants, particularly fans in the pre-jury booths who were already hurting for screen time, not the way to go about it.
What they used to do by choosing that last segment of the reunion to just catch up with everybody, one sentence, how you doing, oh, you're pregnant, you just got a new single that you're releasing, blah, 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 whatever it is, that was fine. Talking to 16, 18, 20 people can be very difficult to do in a block of time. And yes, obviously the ones who make it deepest are the ones that we have the most questions about. What happened when this was going on? Or when you saw that on TV, what did you think? Yes, we need to focus on that. But even
then, we didn't do that. We talked with Cochran. We talked with Dawn and got her to, you know...
And since they had such little faith in this cast that they put Boston Rob in the audience. They put Rudy in the audience.
As like, let's go back in order, okay? We talked to first place. We talked to second place. We didn't talk to third place. We didn't talk to fourth place. We didn't talk to fifth place. Talked to sixth place via satellite. Talked to seventh place, but only in the guise of, oh, you're boy crazy, and here's an awkward... petrified 12-year-old with braces, you know. Talk about
dead air.
My God. You know, talk to eighth place, but only to show a cheesy clip from a soap opera. You know.
Oh, and give him $100,000.
Yeah, and give him that's ninth place. Eighth place, we talked to for 1 second. Talk to 10th place for the BR Rules book. God, again, I'm intrigued, but for all the wrong reasons. And then leave 11th place completely out of the conversation.
Yeah,
I was like. 11 people on your stage, air quotes, you talked to 6 of them. You know, 7 if you count the one line that Reynolds got.
You know, if you're really confused as to what we want to hear, crazy concept. Either A, you could go town hall style with this and actually let people come up to microphones and ask their questions, and you could prep the show that way. 2, you could send people to CBS.com and put up a list of topics. What were the moments of this season that you want to hear discussed on the finale?
I mean, they did a half-assed job of that with the Twitter questions, but of course the Twitter questions were just so inane.
And please correct me if this happened and I wasn't aware of it, but has anyone ever considered taking Survivor Live to CBS.com right after the finale and literally just roaming camera crew and, you know, Parvati or whoever wants to do it can literally walk up to different Survivors and say, we got to talk to you about this. We know there wasn't time on the broadcast, but holy crap.
I mean,
that could be the best live stream ever afterwards.
Exactly, because there were legitimate questions that needed to be asked. I mean, like I said, get an injury update from Shamar and Eric just to have that there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, get a little bit of perspective from Hope and Allie about the Cool Kids Alliance and what it was really about, you know?
Yes.
Have a joking question about when Matt's going to shave his beard. You know, talk to Francesca about the indignity of her situation, you know?
Yeah, instead of just getting that one line during the Survivor walk.
Yeah. And then as far as the later stages of the game, I would love to... I mean, we mentioned this on the last time we podcasted, that Andrea thought Dawn was the mastermind behind her blindside. I want to ask Cochran and Dawn, who really... Like, Andrea says it was Dawn, and some of the other jurors think it was Dawn. The show gave us that more was Cochran. Who really pulled the trigger?
Of course, they don't want their editing ever being pulled into question, even though it was clearly pulled into question by Cochran during that final tribal.
And honestly, you know, we got those two shots of Corinne sitting in the audience just looking so fake happy that it was delicious. But again, she has to sit in the audience while Philip is being celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that just sticks in her craw. And I would have just loved to have the argument on stage.
Yep.
So it's like, just let the feelings vent. You know, they know they can't curse. And even if they do, they're on a 5-second delay.
Probst just sat there and basically prodded Dawn to talk directly to Brenda.
Yeah.
How do you not do the same thing between Corinne and Philip?
Yep. I mean, and the thing with Rudy and Hatch, I mean, first of all, it's great to see Rudy again, and for 85, he's in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
But what was the point of that? It's not like we hit a milestone or anything.
Nope, and it's not like Rudy was coming back for the next season or something, no.
Yeah. It's like, there was absolutely no reason to do that. And again, Probst said Rudy and Hatch are going to weigh in. No, they didn't. They just did a stupid bit, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't actually weigh in on this on the season. It was 2 minutes of absolute fluff and, you know, low grade homophobia from Rudy, but since he's 85, he gets away with it, you know?
Which is wrong. Again, we all have to grow with the times. Everyone's got to get used to it and learn the new terminology. So no, you don't get away with it, I know there was no malice there.
And I still laughed my ass off when they showed the clip, not in a homosexual way. Let me be clear. It's like, I still laugh at that. I'm sorry. It is funny. Because cantankerous old men are funny, and I can't wait to be one myself, you know? But,
So long story short, go back to the drawing board on the darn reunion. This was a change, but it was not in the right direction.
Just get rid of the superfluous commercial breaks. You know, either do a town hall format or pre-screen some questions so that everybody can say something, but don't shortchange the contestants ever again. And if you're going to have somebody not there, just explain why. It's not that hard. We all get it. Brandon's insane. All you have to do is say, Brandon is violently insane. He's not here. Done.
And we were completely foolish for ever putting a single Hans on the program, more or less a double Hans / triple Hans on CBS Family of Networks.
Well, no, Russell was always a good choice.
True. We do miss him, but...
And again, since when is CBS going to admit they did something wrong, but still.
Yeah, that is not very likely to happen. But hey, someday pigs may fly. Geico made it happen. Maybe Survivor can too. So until that time, we hope you've enjoyed this Survivor megadose of the Reality Rant. And of course, the megadose is only made available to you by John Cochran, certified badass. Yes. So until then, we are just going to sit here with glee, hoping that we can have another great finish like this in the upcoming season of Survivor Blood versus Water. Yep, it ain't gonna happen, we know. But until then, Eric Pierce of GameTrainersNet, Bill Hammond, and this Reality Rant podcast is...
Geico also got a girl to try to make out with a pig, so take that however you need to.
Survivor Bestiality Edition.